All right, so we're going to get started here. First of all, we'd like to voice our appreciation for being here today and not still asleep after a long week. So my name is Danielle Decatur, and you probably know Chris Gideon because he's been coming to this since 2002. I feel like you were the very first. I've been presenting ever since. This is actually my first SharePoint conference. My background is in strategy and adoption and change management. And Chris and I are on the same team, and we focus on enterprise social in the US and deploying solutions, and specifically Yammer, and really enabling the success by focusing on adoption and change management and starting with a strategy. So that's kind of what we're going to talk about today.
Right. And as Danielle mentioned, I'm Chris Gideon. I'm an architect with Danielle in Microsoft Consulting Services, focused on social solutions, as she mentioned. One of the other things that we wanted to preface the session with is we tried to work like a network, as the theme you've probably heard all week. So we reached out to a whole series of very bright, very talented individuals to get feedback at various points during the development. And we've tried to bring in a lot of those concepts and make them a part of the presentation. But if you look back towards all the tracks and presentations that we've had this week, you can probably get even more information on the various things that we've brought up. So if any of these spark points of curiosity, you'll find that we've tried to build off of other sessions so you can continue to get more value.
Right, and there's a slide at the end with those related sessions, so please check them out. Okay, so the social journey is probably a familiar concept to you all, at least from this week, if not beyond. But today we're really focusing on the mapping to value, right? But it's not just about identifying value at one stage in the social journey. It's actually a story that will evolve throughout your evolution. And really, as you enrich your network and leverage it to create business value, those measures of value are going to change. So you might start with some analytics from Yammer to kind of take a pulse of how your network is moving. But when it really gets, when the uptake increases, you're really going to engage your workforce to find the actual business value that's driven from the network.
And that kind of brings us to kind of one of the key points that we found in talking to multiple people to build this presentation out, is that everybody has a not necessarily everybody, but a lot of people have a lot of different metrics that they tell you are really important for driving business value. And so one of the things that we wanted to bring up is that while analytics are an excellent way to begin your social journey in terms of measuring user engagement, measuring adoption, in terms of how many people are active and what's going on in your communities, analytics are just one piece of the actual process of measuring business value. So don't get too caught up in the trap of trying to create the perfect dashboard. Because if you spend all your time trying to find the ultimate set of controls for this dashboard that you're going to monitor your enterprise social network with, you may lose sight of the fact that you're flying a big plane or you're driving a car and you're spending all your time staring at the speedometer. So don't necessarily make the search for business value and the correlation of business value directly to analytics. They're a great way to gain insight. They're a great way to find out and listen to the pulse of what's happening in your Yammer networks, but they're not necessarily everything that makes up the way that we approach business value.
And in dashboards, as we know, can be a very effective tool for communicating with executives. But when you're coming up with that dashboard, you know, maybe you don't need a dashboard for a jet plane. Maybe you need a dashboard for a forklift, right? Because it's about focusing on simplicity and what is really related to the business drivers of the particular executive that you're communicating with. So today, we're going to think about value a little bit differently. So we're going to start with the analytics. We're going to do a demo and show what you can actually see in the tool and how that is meaningful to driving business value and how you can use analytics to be responsive and manage a big change in an organization. We're also going to talk about identifying influencers but through the analytics and then using those influencers to actually build the network and participation and the competency in the organization. And then we're going to talk about why analytics don't solve everything. And we'll talk a little bit about tools like workforce analysis that you can use to really listen to your workforce, understand it, and empathize with it in order to drive additional value. Okay, so our demo is going to start with a compelling event. And the event is that there is a new CEO coming into the company. This is not in any way, shape, or form similar to any situation that has happened recently in any company's history. But so in our organization, we know this new CEO is going to be identified, and we know that it's going to impact the organization dramatically. Every single person in the organization is going to have a point of view on it. And so we want to craft a strategy around Yammer to identify points where people, where sentiment goes down, and react in real time and push communications and HR-related initiatives in order to boost sentiment and boost morale and therefore not negatively impact productivity. Because if people are paralyzed by fear, that's affecting their day job. So that is the strategic purpose of human resources and corporate communications partnering on a Yammer-focused strategy to monitor this change in the organization. So we're going to monitor activity, we're going to listen, and listen, adapt, and innovate is a theme hopefully that's been carried out throughout this whole week, and you're probably pretty familiar with it. So we're going to listen, we're going to respond to the activity in real time, and innovation is going to spring from engaging the workforce, maintaining that level of productivity, building competency in the organization, because really this event is an excuse to drive your Yammer adoption, right? And also in this process, we're going to identify potential barriers to working like a network so that as you continue your social journey, you can proactively identify those barriers. And this demonstration, we're actually using Richard DeZerga's great content from his earlier session yesterday, and so we want to call him out and thank him for providing us with this amazing information. And please, if you're interested in learning exactly how to go about building that, please check out his session.
So with that said, there we go. You can see in this particular graph, and first off, let me explain something. This is a subset of the overall Microsoft network. And what I mean by a subset is that this particular set of data is not reflective of the private group activity, it is reflective of the public group activity, and it's not necessarily reflective of all of that. We've tried to segment down some of the things that we didn't necessarily want to disclose as part of the things that we're working on, things we're innovating on. So it's a piece of it. But as Danielle mentioned, when a new CEO comes into effect, you can see that in this particular case, if we look at, we have sentiment score by week on the left. So that's one of the things in this particular case that we're measuring, is we're looking at how are people responding to this event, right? How, what is the sentiment overall within the company? And you can see it's starting to build as we look at week one being around the first part of the year. We were working up towards actually naming a CEO. The CEO comes into play. There's a lot of coverage in the press. There starts to become a lot of uncertainty, and there's actually a dip in sentiment overall. And then an event occurs that really starts to drive home a change in sentiment across the company. And if we try to put a little bit of analytics onto that, and we try and look at this by date, you can start to see that employee sentiment is not necessarily something that's really such a straight line all the time. Employee sentiment goes up and down based on major events that are happening within the company. And as a result of that, when you look at these types of activities and you correlate those back to dates, you can see that there was an announcement that potentially who we thought was going to be the CEO was not going to be the CEO, and so employee sentiment dips for the uncertainty. You can see that as the CEO starts to get announced, there's also excitement, sentiment starts to rise, and then as we get a little bit further into it, we see that there was an event where after the CEO is named, HR communications responds. They set up an employee town hall meeting. The new CEO has the opportunity to actually address the company, start talking about their vision, their direction for where things are going, and we've actually responded to that type of sentiment. And if we drill in and actually look at how that worked across some of the different groups and some of the activity over that time period, you can actually see a couple things here. One, you can see that that CEO connection group that was responsible for trying to really drive an understanding of what was occurring inside the company and really connecting the CEO through the new vision, the new strategy, and things like that with the employees. You can also see that there was also a significant amount of activity in a group called Thanks Steve. So as a new CEO is coming in, there's also a lot of very positive sentiment reflecting the thankfulness that the company had for Steve Ballmer's leadership over the past, right? So we had a lot of very high sentiment reaction. So as part of corporate communications and they're listening to the organization and actually building out a response, you can see that they're adapting to this major situation. They're encouraging the employees, taking away the uncertainty, and in turn, building out a strategy to make people feel that there's more stability, more certainty in what's occurring. And we're going to jump back into a little bit more of these types of stats in a second.
Great. So our fake company used this compelling event, which is a change in CEO, a change in leadership, to promote the Yammer network and actually respond to activity in the network. And the activity of doing this is increasing the competency of the entire organization because it's showing the employees that participating in the network actually elicits response from leadership team, right? And also it enables the leadership team to see how positive sentiment, positive morale is a result of using the Yammer analytics because you use the analytics to determine when you have the employee town hall. You elicit specific communications to address specific pain points, things that people are mentioning. So what's next after this compelling event?
Right, so as part of this, and you've probably heard this in several different sessions, as we go to build confidence, one of the things that we want to try and do as we build out our networks is we want to identify several different types of people that have the ability to do that. We want to identify, first of all, those people that are sometimes referred to in the Yammer community as the ambassadors, those outgoing champions of social networking that go out and do their best to try and encourage others to participate and join into the process. And then there's also another type of people. There's a type of people that are more of the maven type, the more of the subject matter experts that don't necessarily have a strong social networking type of presence, but are incredibly influential in the company. And perhaps maybe they have a huge number of followers that are simply waiting for something to come out because of the degree of thought leadership that they provide, the degree of respect they have in the company. And so one of the reasons that that's important to look and identify for those, to actually take the time to find out who those people are, is because if you look at your interaction today and your rings of influence as it goes out through your network, when we start with yourself and the person that you have a first degree connection with, your influence is very high on that individual. As you get further out and we start talking about degrees of separation, and we talk about friends of friends and friends of friends of friends, or employees that we tangentially know that are somewhat connected to us, that influence declines. And so by seeking out those people and finding out through things like some of the technology you saw this week through Oslo and Social Graph, you'll have the ability to really start drilling in and finding what those connections are and strengthening them and really driving the importance of their particular roles in the company. And potentially in the case of some of the thought leaders, like just to pick on one of our own teammates, I'm sure a lot of you know who Steve Peschke is. He is incredibly knowledgeable. He is probably one of the most knowledgeable people I know on SharePoint overall, but he has a very small social media presence. So identifying something like him as a maven and trying to increase his influence and spread his influence across the network is going to in turn spread that thought leadership and drive a lot more engagement.
Mm-hmm. And so we're actually going to delve into the tool a little bit in a second and look at how you can use the tool to identify some of those kind of nascent influencers, right, with respect to the network. But you can also think of external sources of identifying those mavens, like performance reviews, like who are your top performers in your organization, and are they sharing their knowledge?
Right, and also in some cases, some of the questions that I've asked customers in particular are not just who's the most popular, who's the person that everybody gathers around at the water cooler, but also who's the person that people emulate that is simply the heads-down worker that is incredibly effective at their job? Because you want to bring in all the different types of personalities to really drive engagement overall. But if we focus on a few metrics, because we said we were going to address some metrics, there are some different things that you can look at. You can look at things like growth. And if we look at what in communities of practice that we've had inside of Microsoft within our services organization, these are some of the metrics that we've used to define community health internally. And that was when we were really a distribution list, email-driven company. So all of our internal services groups were completely email-driven. And so as a result of that, we looked at things like positive in terms of growth. We look at positive and negative membership over time, who was actually joining these email distribution groups through things like Active Directory membership, who was leaving. We'd also look at responsiveness, like the average time between the moment that somebody sent an email to one of these communities and the time it took to actually get a response back. We'd look at the interactivity or the interaction in terms of how many replies to a post did we get for a given group. And then we'd also look at liveliness, right? How lively is this particular community? In addition to the group posts that were going across these communities, how many times did we actually see things that were follow-on discussions that spun off from that, that branched? Now, as we move into looking at this type of paradigm in Yammer, you're going to see in the demo that some of these types of things are still effective, and some of them we kind of regroup on and start to look for other ways to measure the value of those communities. So let's jump back to some of that again. So let's first take a look at interaction, because I mentioned that before. And you can see here, this kind of illustrates the point we were talking about when we said that there's mavens, those people that are the subject matter experts, and people that are thought leaders, and then there's also that type that is that ambassador. So if you've been around this week and you've talked to Chris Slimp, you know that Chris Slimp in particular is one of the people that is driving engagement at Microsoft, right?
Oh, nice.
Chris Slimp is in the audience. Yeah. So as you can see, he does have a relatively large degree of followers, but the amount of updates that he makes in driving engagement in the company is very high. Now, if you look in contrast over to the far right, we have, you know, one of the most important thought leaders in the company, we have the CEO. And while he has an enormous number of followers, he currently doesn't have a lot of updates as he begins to shape and refine the vision. We expect to see that change over time as he gets more and more involved in driving the company vision through Yammer, which is one of the things that he said he's going to do. You can also see some of the other key executives we have, but I also wanted to kind of call out that you can see that employee news and events as a person or, you know, as an entity is one of the things that has a high degree of followers and also a high degree of updates. And why that's important is you're beginning to see the change to that two-way conversation, right? That move away from broadcast communication to responding to the news events that are posted to the company, and it begins to drive value in that particular way. You can also see Pulse, which is another news source within the company as well, and you can see that huge number of followers and the number of updates is increasing over time. In addition to that, as I mentioned before, so you have popularity versus interaction or interactivity. So if we go to look at things like messages per thread per group, and what I mean by that is really where I have a post that goes to a group, and then I have the number of people that are actually responding to a post in that group. And in terms of the data set that we have here, I don't think anyone would find it surprising to see that the Yammer customer engagement team, the Yammer customer success managers, have the highest instance of that in our selection here, right? They, on average, have at least 10 responses for every post in their group.
Well done, y'all.
That's right.
I see a couple in the audience. So.
That's right. And then you can also see that one of the other things we're going to illustrate as we start looking at some of this is we start seeing things like events, like this particular event or events that precede it. You can see there's a lot of interactivity around the kickoff for the customer engagement meeting prior to SPC. A lot of conversation and planning went involved in that. And, you know, from what I've heard from several people that were involved, It decreased the number of meetings that they had, which is also a point of business value because those conversations were occurring in Yammer as opposed to having to stop everything and go to a meeting to have a meeting.
Yeah, and that's a great point because when we get into a little bit about workforce analysis and driving out those high-value scenarios, effective meetings is an incredibly high-value scenario across all of the industries and companies that we see. And it's kind of funny because the most optimized effective meeting scenario is no meeting at all.
Right.
Right.
So you can also see this kind of illustrates that same point again. So if we look at the liveliness, like I said, the messages per day, and the responses in terms of threads per messages per day correlated with sentiment over time, you can see that the Yammer customer engagement team meeting had a huge amount of activity, and it was a very, very lively group. You can also see that the messages per day across those different groups changed, and we can also drill in and do different types of activities there as well. Now, I wanted to bring up one last point before I kind of jump off into the next aspect of this. Is we, Richard, myself, and Danielle were really looking at a lot of this data. And I've been asked not necessarily to show who's most followed because of some of the things that we found. But one of the most interesting points is one of the single most active people inside of Microsoft was someone that none of us knew. We had no idea who this particular individual was. We had no idea what group she was in. We spent a great deal of time trying to figure out why, but she has the highest number of followers in the company. She has the highest number of updates in the company, and it turns out that she's actually in charge of approving funding. So, while you have influencers, you also have the woman who holds the gold, right? So keep in mind, you're gonna see different things in terms of identifying the people that provide business value by their role and function. Mm-hmm. Which kind of gets into, oh, let me switch monitors, that would help, right? That really the way that we're working is changing. And so while a lot of these analytics that we've looked at so far are insightful in telling us what's actually occurring in the company, as your network matures, as your organization matures, as a result of using enterprise social networking to bring out change, just as Adam Pizzonia said, and several others in terms of the responsive organization movement, as you start to switch from working in rigid hierarchies where we have to go up one side of the organization and over to the other to get an answer, and you switch more towards a network, the way that you're going to measure business value is going to change because of the change to the culture in the company, the change that the way you work. It's also gonna start to, you know, it brings out the notion of the humanity of social networking as well. Because as we switch to working as a network, and we start working as, did you shift to me?
Yeah, sorry.
That's right. So as we start working as a network and getting into empowering our users and developing that trust, the way that they're going to get the most value is going to be more and more relative. And there's a couple other things that analytics don't necessarily capture, which is one of the things that we really wanted to drive home. When you go to measure things through analytics, even with advanced techniques like sentiment analysis, you don't necessarily capture things like the ethical foundations for a group, especially in things like a multinational situation, right? Where let's say that you have intellectual property that it originates in the US or in Europe, and there's a sense of ownership for that intellectual property. And as that particular document moves over to other cultures around the world, they might look at that as a form of flattery to take your work, copy it, rename it, and apply it as their own. It's a cultural function. And it may not seem ethical to one culture, but it may make sense in another. So it's something to consider that analytics don't necessarily point out. And it also gets into things like values, that really leads into the values and behaviors. Because as humans, we're a little more complicated than just a set of numbers. So whenever you are looking at these analytics, remember to apply that human element to what you're doing, because humans are complex, and especially the type of work that they do changes, right? So as we move from things that are relatively simple types of tasks, because automation replaces those types of simple tasks, and we move up into areas where things are a little more complicated, where we need subject matter experts to help us get through those and create recommended practices and things that will help us, we also move into the things in the area of complexity, where it becomes about the interactions of people and where they are in their geography.
So given these complexities, how do we really drive value forward? Well, remember the listen, adapt, and innovate construct, right? So when we think about listening, we can listen through analytics and we can see numbers and how activity changes over time in response to different events. But it's more than just listening to analytics. It's understanding the context in which these activities are happening. And it's about empathizing with the people involved in these processes, because the more you understand your people and their needs and wants and challenges, the more you can create those opportunities for them to use social to improve the way that they work. So one way that we can approach this is by undertaking a workforce analysis. So what we're talking about here is actually sitting down with the users, having one-on-one conversations with them, and asking them questions to derive exactly what the challenges are in their day-to-day work and how they use technology to help them with those challenges. So we start with talking to the people and developing a set of personas. And we, from there, we identify what the activities are that they're engaged in on a daily basis, and we can articulate them in scenarios. And scenarios are a little bit are similar to use cases, but they actually provide a common dialogue between the IT organization and the users, because the IT organization looks at a scenario and says, okay, this scenario means that I need these capabilities for these people, so I need to provide these apps and these technologies on these specific devices. But when a user looks at a scenario, they say, oh yeah, that's exactly what I do every day. I need to communicate with people on my mobile device. I need to access a document from multiple places. So thinking about a workforce, we traditionally think about them in terms of the functional areas in which they work. A lot of this is because human resources may use completely different set of applications from research and development, for instance, or marketing. But it's not just looking at the different functional areas and the different business value that they're driving in the company, but it's also thinking about the commonalities across those organizations by looking at the work styles of the people involved and the roles. So here's an example of what we're talking about. Here's a classic persona. This is actually a real life situation here. But we see this persona consistently across all industries, all organizations. And for those of you in the audience who are managers or can at least empathize with a manager's plight, a manager has maybe 10 meetings a day. They're also responsible for developing the people that report to them. They're also responsible for driving business metrics forward. And maybe they're actually a worker themselves and they're responsible for certain work products or tasks. So looking at their day in the life, we can actually illustrate what that day looks like, looking at their sample responsibilities, their challenges and needs and wants, and this is where the empathy comes into play. And from there, we derive their capability needs. So it's starting with the user first. And also, this type of tool can be really helpful to articulate to users what's in it for them, right? So when you think about any change that happens in the organization, whether it's a new CEO or whether it's the rollout of Yammer, we need to make that change meaningful for each individual. The manager persona, another reason why we're featuring it here, is because in a change in an organization, that middle management layer is critical to get them to buy into the change that's happening, because they're the people that ultimately have to shoulder the burden of the change, and they have to relate the change to each individual worker in the organization. So let's think about a manager in human resources, right? So now we get back to the business drivers. So if I'm a manager in HR, my responsibilities are to attract and retain top talent. I need to reduce costs associated with training and onboarding. I've got a diverse and distributed workforce that I need to support. Institutional knowledge is flying out the door every day. We've got new people coming into the workforce. We need to transfer knowledge. And also, all the while, making sure that morale is not affected, right? So what are the relevant metrics to an HR manager? We've got cost per hire, turnover costs, length of employment, employee satisfaction. So if I'm a person providing Yammer as a service to help an organization work as a network, how do I make it meaningful to that HR manager? So maybe I zoom in on a specific scenario for this HR manager associated with attracting and hiring talent and then onboarding them into the organization. That whole process is incredibly time intensive. We got a lot of people involved, from all the interviewers to all the legal paperwork involved, very process intensive, but also very qualitative as well, because a lot of discussion goes around how to hire somebody. So if you provide them with a way to collaborate on a particular candidate and determine that they are someone they want in the organization, then help them through that whole signing process, and then engage that new person even before they walk in the door. Now that is a meaningful scenario to that HR manager, right? And that scenario can also be translated to managers throughout the company, because those managers in the business are the ones that need to onboard those new people very quickly. So if they're engaged early on, then that helps that happen seamlessly.
And it's also, you know, kind of to your point, this is about personalizing, not just necessarily down to the individual user, but across the functions that those users provide. And one of the important points about that is there's a whole series of business metrics that are probably in play today that a great deal of time was spent trying to develop them. And so if you're looking at those metrics and you're thinking about how adding enterprise social as an element to improve those processes, you're looking at their impact on those existing metrics in some cases. In some ways, it's not necessarily going to correlate. There won't be an easy way to do it. But in others, you're going to find, through a lot of the stories that you'll see in the customer success library, you're going to see that some of these have actually been mapped to that. And that really takes us to kind of one of the points that we wanted to drive home as well, is that across these roles, across these individuals, really social networking, especially with Yammer, is about driving or empowering that bottom-up approach, right? It's about establishing a series of trust, changing the way that we work as a network, and making sure that that's in alignment with those top-down business goals and visions, so that together we're going from answering the question of what's in it for me as an individual, to how do I interact with my groups of peers, to driving to more of that notion of a community, and in turn, taking that and translating that across a series of metrics such as increasing, or drivers such as increasing revenue or lowering cost or driving profitability or reducing turnover. So if we take a look at it a little bit further, one of the key questions, anytime that you go to approach how you're going to measure the value of something like enterprise networking or the value of Yammer, is going to be, how do you measure it today? It's going to start with those conversations with the folks that you want to go bring into taking advantage of this investment with enterprise social networking, those roles, those functional individuals, and asking them questions about how they do it today. And what you're going to find is, over time, since we know from studies like Gartner that non-routine work is occurring, and why do we think that there's a huge amount of non-routine work occurring, is that we're moving away from the things that can be automated. More and more of the things, especially in places like IT, are being automated to a point where a person doesn't necessarily have to be involved in that, and so it becomes more about shifting gears and going into the creativity around the process, right? Trying to find new ways to drive innovation. And those are going to be a little bit more difficult to address in terms of establishing a metric for business value. But to illustrate the point, we thought we'd give a couple real-world customer examples that we've heard recently. So if we get into those. We recently met with some folks from corporate communications, and one of the very first things that she explained to us that she wanted to get out of the meeting is she wanted to understand the exact approach for mapping an email distribution list to a Yammer group.
Who's heard that before?
Anyone?
Yeah.
So her next question after that was, well, I've already begun this process, or I guess her next point was, I've already begun this process, and I've got several of these DLs mapped over to Yammer groups. But the problem is I don't have any engagement in any of these Yammer groups. I don't have any activity there. And so the question became, well, how did you measure activity prior to this? And what was it that you were actually doing with these distribution lists? And it turns out that the majority of these distribution lists were channels for newsletters. And so we said, well, have you done anything to measure that in the past? Are you looking at how many replies you got to a newsletter? Are you looking at the number of clicks for the links that you had in a newsletter to generate, you know, your measure of value? Because it's a bit of a trap in this particular case, right? There's not necessarily a one-to-one mapping from a DL to a group. I mean, it may align in some cases, but you have to use, you have to kind of readjust and reapproach that conversation in such a way that it's, well, what is it exactly that you're trying to accomplish with these types of communications? And which types of communications are you looking at making more interactive? Which ones do you want to change from a broadcast of getting the message out to ones that you want to have a dialogue about, ones that you want to actually engage employees on?
And I think the distribution list, the membership was totally based on the type of communication vehicle, not based on what the person receiving the message does or what they care about, right? Which is kind of a fundamental flaw in the initial setup of the DL. So why would you want to translate that to a Yammer group, right? So furthermore, I mean, the DL is a one-way communication tool, as evidenced by the fact that there was no attempt to measure replies or clicks or anything like that. And so kind of inherently, this person in corporate communications knew that this Yammer environment could provide a two-way communications vehicle, but really had no idea how to start fostering the two-way communication. So that's actually a business problem. That's not a Yammer problem, right? Yammer helps you solve the business problem, but you need to start with what exactly the purpose of the Yammer group is going to be.
Right. So let's go to another example. One of the things inside of Microsoft, especially in our services organization that works with customers directly, is we have a whole series of communities of practice. And a lot of those communities of practice are built up around different products that we make. So we have a series of deep technical experts that participate in these communities. They answer questions. So when they're, you know, in some ways you could say that we were working a bit as a network through email before, but we, of course, ran into the trap of losing track of how many times that question had been answered. So you always answered the same question over and over, and you had to be a relatively patient participant in those environments. But we had a whole series of those. We had a series of metrics revolved around them. I kind of went through a few of those before for how we measured liveliness, how we measured, you know, the community's ability to respond to those. But one of the things that we kind of went back with some of these types of communities as we move it more into a cohesive knowledge management strategy was to look at it and say, what are the goals of some of these communities? We understand that they're there to provide a location to ask and get an answer, to kind of reach out to a group and get an answer from the larger, broader network and capture, kind of crowdsource that knowledge and bring it back in. But were there any high-level visions for the executives that were sponsoring these communities of practice? And what we found was the people that were using these distribution lists thought that their primary reason was to get answers, right? To ask questions, get answers. The executives actually sponsoring a lot of these communities, their thought process for it was that they wanted the communities to develop and publish intellectual property and take that intellectual property and share it and make it easier to have a broader impact across communities. And so one of the things that we did is work with them to try and find a way to really marry the notion of Yammer with SharePoint so that where they had that structured content that they wanted to capture from these great discussions, give them a way to roll up that knowledge into an easily consumable and rated response to these types of activities. So it gave us an opportunity to really readdress again exactly what was the business value of these communities, even though we already had a set of metrics to measure how they were functioning.
And picking on HR again for a minute. Sorry if there are any HR folks in the room, but HR is a great opportunity to drive value. But thinking about a micro scenario in HR, you know, some HR organizations are very anti-social media, right? Because they think that it negatively impacts productivity, it enables sharing of sensitive information, those types of issues, right? But if you think about a situation where somebody has a question and they post it to a group, eight people respond, you don't want to confine the measurement of value to the reduced amount of time for that question asker to get their answer, because that's limiting, right? But to show HR what the value is, you want to think more broadly about what does the answer to that question really mean for the company, right? And that's where you get back to creating IP to deliver better to customers.
Right.
So, thinking at a broader level, key elements in planning for enterprise social. We start with the strategy and defining exactly what the purpose of adding social and working more like a network is. What are we going to accomplish by working like a network? We need some light governance in place, right, to let's be frank, pacify some of the naysayers, right? But also, you know, it's good to have some governance in place in order to really foster the right kind of activity and to really drive those high value scenarios. And social discovery, we talked about the compelling event of a new CEO, but at a very fundamental level, one of the really high value scenarios for a lot of our customers and the users in our customers is that ability to find information in people and experts really quickly, because Yammer can surface that type of thing really fast. So that's a way that you can kind of prove value immediately.
And so earlier this week, if you attended Steve Wynn's session, you would have seen that there is a customer engagement maturity model that Yammer has established, right? And it may start with things that are basic, like just trying to get users that are to post into the network, just trying to get users to be active in the network, and then slowly working your way up to, you know, making it a general part of your business. And one of the things that we wanted to drive home in terms of this particular way of viewing it is that as a company begins to work like a network more and more, as you start to do things like integrate line of business applications into the process, as you start to, you know, find new ways to take social into processes or interact with people across your company, you're going to see that the types of things that you want to measure are going to change. And if you think about the pace that we're all keeping right now and responding to the pressure that our customers are placing on us externally, you're going to see that this transformation may go faster than you think. And you may be in a state of constantly reevaluating the business value of the different initiatives. I think as you get more and more mature, you're not necessarily measuring the value of Yammer itself. You get into measuring the value of the things that you're trying to improve. Right, and constantly reevaluating what are those types of metrics and what do they mean to the company, and using Yammer as that foundation, as that medium to really make those connections and work, but really putting the focus more off on what you're doing with the product as opposed to the product itself.
Okay, so some key takeaways before we have a lively Q&A, I hope. So we want to get back to basics. We want to think about not just, okay, let's measure it, let's make sure things are happening, but what do we want to measure, right? And don't spend all your time on measuring, spend your time on creating the value and then measure the value. So reestablish the intent of what you're doing. Don't just convert DLs to groups. You know, what are we actually trying to accomplish with the interaction and the network working for you? Don't fall into that trap of dashboards, because it's like the search for the Holy Grail. I mean, everybody, just Indiana Jones, Last Crusade. Does anybody know that reference? Okay. Holy Grail is not necessarily achievable. So you also need a data store.
Yeah, so from a technical perspective, some of the analytics that you may want to capture, some of the ones that are relevant to you that you're gonna actually map out to other analytics, maybe specific business metrics, you're going to want to look at a comprehensive solution that's not necessarily just working off of Yammer exports like we showed today. Something that's really more of like a data warehouse where you can measure things like people coming and going from groups, measure average response time for messages, things like that. Something that you can look back historically as a reference point to show how things were changing across your network.
And lastly, we talked about workforce analysis as a tool for gaining insight in order to drive future value, but you don't need to do a workforce analysis before starting to work like a network. So I just want to be clear about that it can help you, very much so, but you know, just start doing it. Just start working like a network. Identify those activities, talk to a few users, get started.
Right, and don't necessarily be concerned with taking a very long, long approach to, like Daniel says, working like a network, but to thinking that you have to have all of these analytics in place before you even begin the process. I would focus more on the things that you can add a social layer to improve those business processes, than focusing on the analytics that you're going to measure them up front, because that's kind of a trap. I mean, I've done a lot of taxonomy work with SharePoint, since it's a SharePoint audience as well, and I've spent, in some cases, with one customer in particular, 18 months getting them to approve the taxonomy for their structured document management system. And if you get into a position where you're going to spend that amount of time agreeing on what the metrics are, you're not taking advantage of the capabilities that you have with Yammer today. So don't be afraid to get started and get working, but supplement that process with what you can learn. And so that kind of brings us to the point where, since this was a social session, and there are a lot of social experts in the audience, we were hoping that it would be a lively discussion around what you have found, what you'd like to share, in terms of measuring business value. Any tips or tricks that you have? So does anybody feel brave enough to jump up to a mic and talk a bit about some of the things that they've seen working?
And while the Q forums definitely want to have a shout out to all the related sessions, because we've been trying to draw on some of them, but we know that we've missed a bunch of references in our slides. So please check out these related sessions and these social resources. Okay. And complete a session evaluation.
All right. So anybody want to jump to a mic?
Any questions?
Yeah, we're kind of hoping to leverage
hustle.
That social passion.
Are you leaving? Or are you going to a mic? Okay. All right. Thank you. Yeah.
So in the analytics, we're evaluating, you know, the effectiveness of Yammer. And I know there's quantitative things that we can look at, but there's also non-qualitative, kind of the soft stories that get generated. And yeah, we've learned about the Yammer win tag or topic. My question is, are we still having to evaluate the effectiveness of Outlook email or the effectiveness of SharePoint? Are we still looking at that? So, you know, it's a new tool, I understand that, and people want to know, is it really driving any value? But are we really looking at the value we get from email or SharePoint in the same way?
I am so glad you asked that question.
Nice question.
I just had that discussion Sunday with several different people. We had kind of some of the customer success managers got together, and we were going through that very question. And what I was explaining to them is, as we change from an email-driven culture at Microsoft to taking more and more advantage of Yammer, one of the things, as I was explaining, is you're going to see, if we look at the patterns of activity and analytics in our Yammer network today, you're going to see a set of influencers, you're going to see a set of followers and things like that, but you're going to only see a fraction of the picture. Because as a company that's worked through email primarily, I know that there's some people that get thousands of messages per day and somehow manage to answer all of those mails. So if we look at the network and the connectivity that they have in mail today, it kind of gives us an idea of, in one way, doing discovery and finding out who those individuals are and bringing them on board and getting to understand the benefit of not having to repeat themselves in some cases and really starting to derive the value that they have there in Yammer. And also going back to the value in SharePoint, I think with things like what we've seen this week with Office Graph and Oslo, it's really going to change the way that we surface knowledge. I think it's going to significantly change the way that we work. And I think in terms of evaluating Yammer in conjunction with SharePoint, bringing that degree of integration is going to make it a relatively seamless experience to getting to that and measuring the value of it, because we're just going to see an increase in productivity overall. Anybody else want to jump up to the mic? I know so many people in this audience that have so much to say, and they're not getting
it. Tempting to call on them, isn't it?
Yeah, I know it is tempting.
Yeah.
One thing, so when we talk about analytics, I think is really important, and you guys kind of drove home that, you know, don't focus on just the dashboard. You know, don't just focus on the pure numbers. And so when you're thinking about the analytics and tying it to even business success factors. So are the store managers that are the most active on Yammer, hey, are their numbers better? You know, and we do have customers who have done studies like that. And I think the key message is, as you're doing it, it's not necessarily the causation, but it might be there's a correlation. So why is that? You know, why are they more active on Yammer? What is they're doing? Is it because that's how they're interacting with their team? Those types of things. So it's, even if you see those numbers, it's important to kind of dig in to try and see, well, what's the underlying piece? Is it just because they're posting? Because there's going to be more to it than the fact that they're just posting.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree. And working with kind of a SharePoint-related example, but working with a multinational as far as digging into metrics, one of the things that we saw when we were evaluating their farms, because they have farms that are in the United States, they have farms that are in Europe, they have farms that are in Asia as well. And one of the things that we saw in terms of even document management in that case is we were monitoring those that type of activity, is we saw that in the United States, we had a high degree of write once, maybe read twice. When we moved and started to look into the European experience, we saw that those numbers went up to around 11 times after something was written. And when we moved over to Asia, we saw that there were 23 times more activity around a document. Now, when you first look at that, you might just think, well, the whole reason that there's so much more activity in Asia is because they're a more collaborative culture. Maybe if you're looking at the date. But if you really drill in to Chad's point and you start looking at how does Asian culture really work, they are a very, especially in China, a very hierarchical driven culture, right? So if Danielle starts off with a point and she publishes a document or makes a post, someone that's higher up in her particular organizational structure will come back in with a counterpost and maybe even just add one word to what she said. Another will come in after that and add another. And so it's the nature of that culture that may give you a false perception of activity there. So it's really driving back to the whole value discussion around those different types of metrics and really drilling in and trying to understand how the cultures of these different groups are impacting it. Another question.
So management loves eye candy, and you presented some fantastic stories up there in Excel. Is all of that stuff available with reference to that other presentation that you made earlier?
That's right. Richard DeZerga has gone and posted.
He shows how to do that.
Yeah, he shows how to do it, and he's also posted a lot of the material and the hows and some examples of how to get to that.
Excellent.
And he's right over here.
Yeah.
Hey, Richard.
Any other questions or tidbits or knowledge you want to share?
Yeah, or share your story. It doesn't have to be a question. Share your point of view. Disagree with us. That's cool. Yeah, go ahead.
So I had a question about the analytics. I came in a little late, but the Excel file you showed, it looks like you guys manipulated that data yourself, or is that all built into the spreadsheet you download from Yammer?
So what Richard's done is he's actually taken the CSV, the export of the Yammer tenant itself, and then we've brought that into Power Pivot, and he explains it a little bit better in his session. Okay. And then in turn with that, we've tried to correlate that with a series of the important things that we wanted to get out of those messages.
Is there any plan of actually building that into Yammer, or is that just how it's going to be? It's just going to be a giant export, and you manipulate it how you want.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear the question.
So, I mean, are you guys going to build that into Yammer, like the export, like the manipulation of the data, or is that just like how it's going to be?
Yeah, since I'm not a member of the engineering team nor a member of marketing, I can't necessarily answer that question. But I can say that improvement analytics, I believe, is on the roadmap. Okay. I think that's about as far as I can go with it.
All right, thanks.
Yeah, and if you couldn't hear what Richard said, he said that it is a repeatable thing to do. You can continue to work and manipulate and massage those types of exports. Any other questions or comments or stories? If not, and nobody wants to continue it here, feel free to continue it in
yes.
the external network.
Wait.
Oh, we got one? Great.
Hi. So I work in a company about 25,000, and there's about 500 of us who see the value of social, and there's a lot of, it's a very old school company, and there's a lot of people who don't get it yet. So we've set up a social network, and we've tried to get this going. And sort of the analytics that we're taking right now are pretty depressing. There's not a lot of activity, there's not a lot of engagement, and therefore when people post, nobody sees it because nobody ever has time for this, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the constant reinforcement that we get. So when we take metrics, we're sort of reinforcing our own failure. When we bring it up to the executives, we say, well, it's not working, but it's not going to work until it works, right? And then it's really going to work, but how do you explain that through metrics? How do you get people to understand that you need the critical mass to move on?
Do you currently have a process by which you're capturing more anecdotal successes?
We have that, but with my particular vice presidents, mm-hmm. they don't like stories. They like...
Sure,
it's
data.
It's yeah, almost like they automatically dismiss a story because sure. it's not based on numbers.
May I ask another question?
Sure.
So those 500 people that you say are pro-social, what does that population look like? Where do they sit organizationally? What do they do? How did you identify them?
So I work at the headquarters, and it's a holding company of a bunch of independent companies. So yeah. it's basically people who are really involved at the headquarters, mm-hmm. and it's not very many people who are embedded in the business units themselves. So that causes another problem where this social thing is sort of HQ making us do more stuff.
Sure.
So it's hard to get into those companies without management going to their management and saying, let's put social on the roadmap. It's hard for us to show them where they're the ones actually making all the money. So they need to be the ones that are getting this value. It's hard to get there.
So I'll provide a suggestion, but I also would love the Yammer team to jump in at any moment here if they've got some anecdotes to contribute. But one of the reasons why we talked about workforce analysis is because not just a gathering insights on the workforce itself, but it helps you to engage with those people that are not at headquarters, right? So if we go in and if we did a workforce analysis at your organization or persona analysis, we would absolutely be identifying people across multiple geographies, because what you might find is there is a high value scenario that actually cuts across multiple geos that can have more of an amplification effect that can actually give you more of that data. Mm-hmm. But please feel free to, anyone else want to jump in on that, happy to.
Well, that's one of the things that I found too, because especially in scenarios where, you know, Yammer is provided through IT and it doesn't necessarily come directly from a business request.
Right.
And the technology is provided and it's not necessarily, you know, pre-established with a purpose or a strategy for the business. What I try to do at that point is start asking questions that, you know, of leadership. I try to get back with leadership and I try to ask them, you know, start with the big things like, what is your vision? You know, what are your business drivers? You know, what are the things that you want to happen this quarter, this year? What are the business objectives that you have mapped those into for the people that are just down from you that are maybe managing the different divisions in the company? And start having an understanding of what those are and how those relate to the overall strategy and vision for the company. And then, basically just constantly asking, you know, why back to those particular objectives and reasons, and then trying to get meetings with those individuals that are in control of driving those objectives. And then, as Danielle said, really doing the workforce analysis and the persona, you know, analysis with them to capture the key scenarios where social may work. And, you know, don't be afraid to start small with that too, right? I mean, don't necessarily jump out and say, oh, I understand after talking to you, you have, you know, 12 major business objectives that are going down this year. You may pick like one or two, right? Or, you know, three, and I really work through those with them and try and identify the ways that social is going to assist in those scenarios. And you may get some scenarios presented to you or some business objectives that when you look at them go, I don't know that social is going to help that scenario. Right, and you may find others where communication actually does, right? That increased communication, that increased conversation with it is there. The other thing that I would say in talking with customers like that is I try not to necessarily go with the blank paper, because I find that when you're going in a situation like that to a business decision maker, that you sometimes run into writer's block, right? Mm-hmm. You start asking those questions and they're like, well, I don't know. You tell me. I mean, what should I be focused on? And so a lot of times we'll come in with a series of sample scenarios or sample use cases where we, we know it's helped different aspects of a business or may align to the business functions or roles like Danielle mentioned. You know, like, so if you're going to go to talk to HR, you have a series of use cases, and again, you can check in with the customer success library and find out not necessarily just some of those anecdotes, but also some of the use cases as a way to talk about or encourage a conversation with those groups to try and really bring about what they're looking for.
And then also, because you said start small too, so, you know, it's probably not, you're not going to be able to go back to your leadership and say, we need a workforce analysis, let's just, right?
Right.
So maybe it's about starting really small by using existing networks, really informal networks, people, you know, so and Susan that used to work in this location and really knows Bob, and so you actually reach out to multiple geographies via those informal connections and have conversations with them and just talk to them about what the commonalities are across the geographies or what's meaningful to them. And then that might help you surface those starting scenarios to bring to your leadership.
Another one that I found that's kind of surprising, and I've heard it from several different customers too, is talking to alumni. You know, some of the folks that have retired from the organization that were still very actively engaged, and it's almost like a football fan with the company. They really loved their time there, but now they've retired, and if you have an opportunity to reach out to those people and talk about the things that really impacted them in the company, they may be able to give you the people to connect to talk with and have that dialogue, right?
Cool. Thanks very much.
Yeah. That was a meaty one.
Questions,
thank
comments?
You.
Yeah.
We actually did a couple of things that might be helpful for scenarios like that.
Yeah.
One of the first things we did is we put out a call for early adopters. And I work for a professional services firm, very conservative, very old school, definitely a layer at the top of folks who like the way they're doing things. Putting out a call for early adopters, people who wanted to participate, cut right through that layer. We identified people who were interested, who it wasn't based on hierarchy, it wasn't based on existing relationships. And we had over 500 people either nominate their group, nominate someone they knew, or nominate themselves to participate. And then what we did with those early adopters who had popped up, the groups that had been nominated, we reached out to the nominator and the leader, sat down with them, and did a structured interview that walked through basically your workforce analysis,
mm-hmm.
where we looked at their pain points, we looked at what their group went through every day, what their responsibilities were, what the immediate challenges were, what their goals were for the year, and then mapped those to how Yammer could either help, or if Yammer wasn't a fit, told them so.
Mm-hmm.
Then as part of that early adopter period, they had someone work with them to actually execute in that group, so basically a mentor, and teach them how to use Yammer on the ground with their group. And that was the core of our launch.
Fantastic. Thank you. And going through that process with those people actually become champions, not just for Yammer, but for the entire IT organization. For pretty much when we do workforce analysis, we do it focused on social, but really the learnings and the relationships built in that process can carry you through any IT initiative that you might have. Because you've got, it's beyond just user groups, the super users, because you're actually looking at people that maybe aren't as tech savvy. Right, or maybe they're kind of more negative or curmudgeon-y types, right? So it's about expanding the network of influencers in the organization to help IT.
Yeah, and to follow on to that, I recently visited a customer, and we were doing some of that interviewing process that you mentioned, really trying to talk to some of the early adopters and really get into the way that they did their job, like understanding the scenarios that related to their job. And it was a personal record for me, but this particular individual explained to me that to do their job required 217 distinct tasks. And you want to just look at it and say, well, before we even discuss social, let's reevaluate why there's 217 tasks to get there. And it kind of opened up a dialogue that was completely different around their process overall. And so what was interesting from this user's perspective was initially she was relatively frightened to even bring this up because she was afraid that somehow by talking to me it might make it worse. So it's like, no, I promise I'm really here to help you. I'd like this to be a little bit easier for you to work through. So kind of to your point where it starts a dialogue, we were able to really find out that all of these steps that she was doing was because no one had ever really asked her what it was that she actually needed to do. And so we were able to take her from about 217 steps down to about 15. So significantly better. And also, in doing that, she ended up becoming a major champion for Yammer simply because she felt like somebody had really come and helped her, and it freed up so much of her time that she became a lot more active.
Was she by chance one of those people that when you first started talking to her thought that social equals Facebook?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Very true. Any other scenarios? Well, I guess in that particular case, feel free to carry on the conversation, especially anybody that's shy about getting up in public and talking about it. Carry on in the Yammer Network for SBC. We're happy to jump in. We're happy to act as connectors and try and bring the people that are subject matter experts in those cases together to help you as well. And thank you for taking the time to come and listen to us talk about it. We hope that it helps you, stimulates you, gives you some ideas on ways that you might be able to find business value to you, because in the end, getting business value out of something like Yammer is a very personal, relative thing. Right? So thank you very much.